Every week, Reform UK contests, local by-elections up and down the country. And today we are going to take a deep dive into the elections that happened on Thursday, 2nd October, 2025. Did we win or lose? And in particular, what can we learn from the campaigns we fought? We start off with Jason Moorcroft, who contested Ellesmere Port in Cheshire.
Yeah, and the other thing is, the other parties have worked that area for quite some time, for decades. So they know where the strengths are, the weaknesses. They know not so much what the messaging is, because I think some of the other candidates went with the wrong message. But we had to find that out in a very short period of time. And it was literally on the door. So the first week or so, it was find out what's going on. Where's our strengths? Where's going to be our weaknesses? Where's our pockets of reform voters? Which one, you know, which areas are not going to be so productive for us? So the first week, maybe 2 weeks, we're finding our feet.
So it sounds like to start with, it was very much about assessing which areas you were likely to get some support in, other areas where maybe there was already a very strong Labour vote that was going to be hard to overturn with this particular election.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, there were some areas which were very tribal. And that's not just for Labour, it was for the Conservatives, for the Lib Dems, and it didn't make a difference what our message was. It was just, that's how they were voting, without even reading any of the other candidates' policies. So we sought out and we made a lot of new friends along the way. Our pockets of support, and it was overwhelming. You know, once we found the areas, we thought, well, these are the parts of the community which are going to actually support us. It was smooth sailing for Madam. Well, the main thing, and this is personal, I think that your local councillors should be accessible, transparent and accountable. That's where we went out at first. As we were going round, there was a lot of concerns about open spaces, green spaces and the management of the roads, which I think's everywhere around Cheshire at the moment. And then we also discovered that there's the start of HMOs being brought into this sort of suburb, and there was quite a lot of opposition to that as well. So we adapted the message as we went along.
You find using different forms of media. Did you do much on social media, or was it mostly you know, traditional forms, a leaflet, calling card, etc.?
Yeah, well, we looked at the sort of demographic of the population, and a lot of people were elderly. So there's quite an elderly population. So Facebook and things like that was probably not going to get much traction with the people who are actually going to vote. So we did a little bit of Facebook activity, but not a great deal. Perhaps we should have done more. I'm a big lover to going out and meet people. I think you're more likely to vote for somebody who shut their hand and looked into the whites of their eyes and gone, okay, can I trust you as my councillor? Do I want you as my councillor? And that I strongly and firmly believe in, that's the right way to do it. And it obviously worked. You know, we got a fantastic result, and we got a lot of support.
So on the polling day, you know, obviously this is often a bit of a nail-biting time for candidates, because lots of things can affect whether you're going to get your votes actually on the ballot paper and in the ballot box. Now, the weather hasn't been that great recently, and of course we're coming into winter, so that can affect turnout. What was the turnout like for your by-election yesterday?
It was 40%, which was higher than what we expected, which is good because it shows that people are engaging with democracy. We found that we struggled because recovering times from early in the morning to late in the evening, and if we've only got a small canvas team, it's almost impossible to do the telling and the calling round on the actual day. So that's a learning curve for us within the branch. We need to have those teams ready and be prepared for even for the larger elections as and when they come up.
How many votes were submitted via postal voting? Do you have those numbers?
Oh, I do. I've submitted them to HQ. I think it was about 500.
So a reasonable proportion of people decided to vote by their postal vote.
Yeah.
And we've noticed these trends actually. I'm very interested in those particular trends that more and more people are choosing to vote via a postal vote for various different reasons. When you came across a reform voter, did you find that they were preferring to choose to vote via a postal vote, or were they somebody who was going to go and vote in person?
The majority were in person, which I think with that, and if you look, going back to what I said before, it took us a couple of weeks to get our messaging right and get out to meet the people, by which time the postal votes had already been submitted. So we were sort of, going after chasing things which had already been done. So we couldn't have changed that and changed that m voter's mind.
Yes.
And that strikes me, we've got to know the messaging straight from the off. And
So that's a bit of a learning point, isn't it? And maybe for anybody watching the podcast or listening to it, who's in a branch where maybe a by-election has just been called, or they're noticing maybe a by-election has been called, but we haven't quite got the date of the election yet, or there's one going to happen. What learning lessons would you say we can all learn from your experiences?
well, and this is why I'm pointing out to my branch, because I'm obviously the chair as well, going forwards, that every single ward, we need to be active now. We need to have a person who's immediately recognisable as the reform, I won't say spokesperson, but who's going to be the candidate, so they can build up the trust and the visibility within the ward before it's even started, which will overcome a period of time. We need to know the messaging, and we need to maintain it before the election's even called. So when the election is called, we know where to knock, and immediately that counts 50% of our time, because we know that our vote support is in certain locations.
Sounds also like you're saying, because you perhaps missed the deadline for getting the messaging out prior to the postal votes, because it's very tight, isn't it? When you have a
Yeah.
by-election, the postal votes go out pretty soon after the election's been called. You've only got a matter of a couple of weeks normally. So what would you say to somebody who's perhaps thinking about standing to be a candidate, or a branch that's looking to put somebody forward at a by-election in terms of their messaging?
In terms of the messaging, well, it's got to be appropriate. Well, you need to know your voter base. What's going to resonate with them, and it'd be different in different areas, as we all know. So if you're going into rural areas, it'd be completely different to inner city. You need to know what are the two or three facts that are going to say, yes, I agree with that, I'm voting for you. So you need to get that out, and then you need to tell them how they're going to do it. So it's not just saying, oh, I want all the curbs cut, or the verges cut. How are we going to do that? Because obviously the incumbent person now isn't doing it. So how are we going to be different?
So what next for Jason Moorcroft?
What do we do? Well, obviously I'm chair of the branch. So now we've got another 30 odd wards to go and repeat the template that we've got here. So we're going to be very active throughout every single ward. We're now involved with many groups in the area who have come forward to us. So we're going to be really active on there. And our next elections are not until 2027. But the groundwork starts today.
It was a 6 week campaign, roughly, and it can be an emotional roller coaster. We started with the canvassing, so we canvassed every house in the ward, roughly 6,000, 9,500 people. And when I say it's an emotional roller coaster, you can get two people when you knock on the door that love you and support the party, love the party. And then you get somebody that waves you away with some expletive, and it is a vital part of the campaign process. It is absolute. Everything else then feeds off that. Once you have that data, everything else follows so much easier. So we then followed with the second leaflet. So whilst we were canvassing, we took out the first leaflet, and then we had a week before the actual election to get out the second letter and the third letter, about maybe 10 days. And then of course, you've got the morning raid, the dawn raid on the day of the election. But all of those things became so much easier and more cost effective when we realised exactly where the support was.
And so, from the previous time, the Labour Party were on what percentage last time round?
They had about 1,700 votes.
And so that went down to what this time?
Under 900.
So you pretty well halved their vote, more or less.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And how many volunteers did you have out to actually knock on all those doors?
Oh, I'd struggle to put a number on it. I think from across the region, we had supporters that came from Tameside. Occasionally, we had supporters that came from other branches throughout the area. I myself, from our own branch, probably had a nucleus of around about 20 people.
And
And
they were turning out regularly for the leafleting and for the canvassing.
yeah, there was occasions when it was just my wife and I, but more often than not, we'd have maybe four or five of us out at any one time.
So I think we shouldn't forget, actually, as part of this podcast, to say what an enormous vote of thanks from all of us in the party goes to those volunteers who put in all that effort supporting you in the campaign. Because really, across the board, we rely on the people putting in those hard yards, whether we win or we lose. So I have got total respect for the members that have put in that effort. So thank you very much to all of them.
I couldn't agree more wholeheartedly. They are vital. They are absolutely vital. And when it comes to May, of course, when we're going to do it all again, they're spread so much thinner. I had the support of the entire branch.
Yeah.
So it's massive between now and May that as many people put their hand up and volunteer their valuable time. And even if that's only for a couple of hours, if you multiply that by 20 people, that's 40 man hours out on the streets, which makes a massive difference.
How did your campaign strategy go?
Very, very well. I've been personally, I learn personally from doing. So transfer of knowledge, for example. So I volunteered an awful lot of times to work with other branches when they had their own by-elections, and in Runcorn and Helsby, of course. So I could see what had worked in various other branches. I volunteered in Witten, which is where I picked up the Google Sheets to use to plan our routes. From the guys over there. I volunteered in multiple places. I say Runcorn and Helsby. The difficulty that I could see over there was the paper trail. I could see that people were handing out massive pieces of paper, masses of paper, and I wanted to try and digitalise as much of it as I could, so that it was then easily transferred back onto the Reform Pro system. So that data is data that we have forever and a day, essentially, in identity. And that's the advantage that the Uni Party have, and the Lib Dems, is that they have that data going back decades. I would urge anybody watching this that is involved in the May elections to actually start gathering that data now. Don't wait until 6 weeks before the election date, because it is full on. You have to be out every single day. And bearing in mind that takes us into the dark nights in March, for example. Whereas if they started to do a couple of hours every Saturday and Sunday between now and May, they could break the back of it and have all of that data before their official campaign even starts.
What other learning lessons did you take from your campaign?
I think first and foremost is don't sweat the small stuff. Don't get stressed over things that you can't change, because it is a long, drawn out process. But if you do it properly, it's very, very successful. The party already provides you with a template of how to do it. And a lot of people get squeamish about knocking on doors, about asking people what the voter intention may be. And we use the hypothetical. So if there was an election tomorrow, how would you choose to vote? So as not to alert the Labour supporters, for example. But that hypothetical is relevant today because there isn't an election for 6 months. So in terms of things that we learned as we went, we evolved. We improved on the Google Sheets. Trying to map out the Google Sheets is very, very complicated. And that's why, once again, the biggest learning curve is if you start now, you will have that process refined and honed by April, when you can just approach your known support very, very efficiently.
Can I ask about postal votes? How do you think you fared on the postal vote front by comparison to the Labour Party?
I think that theirs reduced previously in the last election in this ward. They generated about 1,300 postal votes. So I attended both openings of the postal votes, and that had dropped to about 1,100. So I knew immediately that they had a 200 vote drop off at that point. I also knew, because we'd been out and canvassed our postal voters, that we had some in the region of 300. So their overall, so assuming that the vast majority of postal voters were previously Labour voters, they'd already had a drop of somewhere in the region of 500, maybe 400 potential votes.
Moving forward on postal votes towards the next elections, have you considered having a campaign to persuade people you've identified as reform voters to get a postal vote?
Yes, I have considered that, and we did have that conversation on the doorstep when we were asking people what the voter intention was. I guess the question is how trusting we are of the postal vote system and what the party proposes to do when they get into power about the postal vote system.
I think what we might do about it once we're in power is a very different thing as to how we deal with it now, because
Yeah.
as I think you said yourself earlier, we have to deal with the world as it is rather than the world as we might wish it to be.
Yeah.
And one of the things we do know about postal votes is postal voters vote at 80%,
Yeah.
whereas if you take an overall 30% turnout, that probably means that the people voting in polling stations weren't turning out at more than about 20%.
Yeah.
So if you've got a group of people who turn out at 80% and a group of people who turn out at 20%, we really want as many of our supporters to be in the 80%. And so the more of our supporters we can encourage. So every time we bump into someone who says that they support reform, my view is that we should be encouraging them, get a postal vote.
Yeah.
Because whether they intend to or not, it will, across the piece, mean that the percentage of them voting will go up at every election.
I want to ask about media and social media. To what extent did that play a part in the campaign, Lee?
It's been a very successful part of our evolution in the last 6 months. So we have a pop-up event every week where we get the gazebo out and we perform a social service in picking litter. We collect litter. We're very visible. We have HVVs, and that's grown our social media in our Facebook following from around about 500 to about 6,000, almost 6,000 people. Now,
Very good.
the thing to bear in mind with social media, of course, is those people could be in Swindon, they could be in Glasgow. They're not necessarily going to be in Wigan or Wigan West. But some of the posts that we've had have had upwards of 300,000 views. You know, so it's played a massive part in our visibility in the Wigan area.
And that's on Facebook, is it, those
It
views?
is, yeah. And we find everybody, the most famous part of our entire branch is the gazebo by a long way. And we find that people want to get involved. They want to be involved with that because it's low intensity. It doesn't take a huge amount of effort. It doesn't garner conflict, and you get a lot of support from passers-by, beeping the horns and waving at you, and so it's very self-actuating. It gives you that confidence to then move on and continue doing what you're doing. I would first and foremost, if there are volunteers and supporters watching this, please put your head above the parapet and be prepared to support your local candidate, because things aren't going to change if we don't make them change. If we don't, you can't rely on a national presence and the party to get people into power. You've got to get out and you've got to do the legwork. And I would ask them to start doing it tomorrow. Don't wait until February, March, or April, because it will be too late.
Well, amen to that. And thank you very much, Lee, for your time. And thank you and congratulations on your victory. Can we open by asking you to give us an overview of the campaign from your perspective?
Yeah, certainly, Nick. When we first started, we were actually just a just won our AGM, so we were still in the handover phase, so it was actually a little bit clunky to begin with, but we knew that we had a vital role that we needed to get going on this campaign straight away. And this campaign was a little bit more unique as well, because we didn't just have one candidate standing, we had three, so we had to find three candidates, get their leaflet and literature already sorted as we were still having IT handover from the headquarters. And to looking at the end goal, as you've seen, we actually delivered on the results. To actually have that slight clunkiness at the beginning to then deliver even at the end, I can only say to all the volunteers and the candidates that they've got to give themselves a good pat on the back, because I think we did actually not just that, but we won by quite a big majority. And one of the important things I think led to that was getting involved with the local activists in the area, Save Our Heathlands being the big sticking point in the area, but then understanding that they've spoken to previous parties before and they've failed to listen and deliver on what they've actually asked about. So, you know, what we're having now is a fresh perspective, Reform being completely newbies in there, but having a fresh canvas to really tackle these issues and using the advice given to us by Save Our Heathlands to tackle the relevant issues.
Well, that's fantastic. In fact, what we should say to everyone who isn't aware, what a stonking victory you had. I mean, it was like those old Labour seats, the way you weighed the votes in because they were so far ahead. And it seemed very much like, I think you must have had one of the very best results in terms of numbers of any Reform victory that I recall looking at. So perhaps you just refresh people's minds as to quite how overwhelming your victory was on all three of those councillors.
Well, as you know, there's a three vote, so you tend to get one person who gets the least out of the three. But considering they got 51% of the vote and the next person was the Green candidate who only got 20.9%, you're looking at a 30. They were closer to having 0% than they were actually catching us. We could have almost given votes for charity. But the people actually did really speak up and said, no, enough is enough. We're not listening to the fluff no more. And they really want change. And it's not just the Nigel effect. It is actually the fact that the candidates went on the ground, engaged with the people, knocked on the doors at the polling stations. The amount of people said it was nice to see someone actually knock on my door and not just shove something through the letterbox. So that is just emphasizing how active we were as volunteers out there, pushing the message and delivering and actually speaking. And part of the feedback as well, even from other people, was actually there were some people saying, why should I vote for any of them? And then once we broke it down and said, look, well, the Tories, they implemented some of these bits. Then you went to the Lib Dems and they pushed their local plan, which then hinders some of the challenges to Heathlands. And then you've got the Green Party basically giving up and saying, well, there's nothing we can do. We've just basically got to get the best out of a bad deal. And it's like, you know, that's just really not acceptable. That doesn't feel like those councillors have really fought for those individuals. And the thing is, I don't know if it's some party politics or whatever goes on behind the scenes. Obviously, you never know that kind of stuff. But at least Reform, we haven't been given anything to be told. You've got to make coalitions and that. So I've said to the candidates, well, not candidates now, they're now elected councillors, there's no such orders there. You just do what you need to do and fight the people's corner.
And that was fantastic. Could you just give us a feel, both for the demographics of the ward, I mean, working class, richer people, poorer people, and also just a word or two about this Heathland issue that was so pertinent in the campaign?
Well, it's people aren't necessarily against development, right? But what they are against is when you've actually have a mass development, when you've got to consider when Operation Brock is also in effect as well, that actually caused a lot of traffic disruption in the area. So also you've got to consider that if you've got 5,000 new houses being built, you're probably looking at least 7,500 new cars, maybe on average, maybe even higher, which is then going to amount to more traffic on the roads, which, you know, it then needs to be repaired. The more flow you've got, the roads then will start to get potholes a lot quicker and all the rest. So that adds to that element. But it's also stuff like, are you going to have a more local GP? So then that way you can then have people then using that local GP rather than travelling further afield. There was also talks about a new train station being put there, but Eastern Rail have refused to put one. So then when you look at it, it's just like, where's the coordination to actually make this a real sustainable, a real well thought out plan? And to add to it, the waste, they can't connect onto the existing waste. So what they're having to do is they're having to basically have a massive cesspit and basically take it out. Well, you know what the service charges are like in flats and stuff. Apparently it starts off as, okay, it's only 50 quid a month, goes up to 75, goes to 100, and then they cut less frequently, and it just ends up being like a little sort of rolling income for the person who has the contract. But it's little things like that where you look at and you think, is the best interest of the people there have being thought about? Also, are these houses for the local people? Because we have had it in Kent where you've had Lewisham Council actually buying places in Swale. So you've got to think that, are these going to be for people where they can move out their mum and dad's place, stay local, see their nan, and be still living in the village they're in? When you consider minimum wage in the southern area compared to the northern area reflected with the house prices, you're more likely the people are going to be staying with mum and dad, or they're going to be moving out of the county.
So just before, this is my final question, then I'm going to hand over to Wendy. Can you just paint a picture of who are the residents in the ward at the moment? Are they hardworking, middle class, working class? What sort of people are they in the ward?
I would say you've got actually quite a sort of broad church with the amount of people there. I don't think you particularly have like a rich, wealthy class. Yes, maybe further afield in the more rurally areas, you tend to see the houses are a bit bigger. But if you were to look inside Lenham and Harrisham, I'd say you've got a very good mix. I would say there is working class. One of the key things that I saw was the amount of people when we did our dawn raid in the morning of the campaign on the polling day, is we did see a lot of cars that, you know, were on their way out as we were approaching the 7 o'clock mark, getting themselves ready to go to work. So I think there is quite a broadened church of people who are there.
Thanks.
One of the things I'm interested in, Ryan, in talking to caremen, to candidates all over the country following these by-elections, is what was the thrust of your campaign? I'd like to understand the balance between local issues that you fought for or campaigned for and the national picture and the national message.
Well, I think Nigel does very well with the national message, but we do have to be apparent that you don't want to confuse the national and the local. At the end of the day, these councillors are only going to be affecting local issues. They might be able to then, with the help of the national stuff, if Nigel was to get into number 10, to then help streamline some of the stuff going forward. But they only have limited powers to what they actually can do. So you don't want to be over-promising the locals, because then what you're doing is you're showing them that you're promising the world and delivering nothing. And that's not what reform's about. Reform's about actually reforming the whole system from top to bottom. So Nigel focuses on the national stuff, but us down at the local level, we really do target on the local issues, because that's where our councillors can actually deliver.
What are those local messages, apart from the housing one that you've described? What other local messages or campaign messages were you focusing on?
Well, the housing one was the biggest one. So by far, that was the very sticking point. If you do look at some of the news bits, it does seem like some people would say it was about that. But there is obviously the growing things compared to, are you going to build enough schools? And the other thing, a lot of it does come to that infrastructural level. But there is going to be things like the slight antisocial behaviour maybe in the area and small things like that, which people will obviously let you know at the doorsteps. I do live in the Faversham part, so my information on the ground was trying to get as much as I can from those local people, so then we can build the picture to go, right, let's make a note of it. We'll let then, if the council gets elected, we can then highlight these issues, because there'll be a certain road or maybe a park after a certain time. It might be like, yeah, you get a few people, they drink where they shouldn't be or something like that. And it's always good to have that pattern of life, so you can then push it onto the councillors and then they can make a note of it and then they can do something when they get in.
Thank you.
Looking at the campaign itself, could you tell us, did you get much help from neighbouring branches, or was it all your own volunteers? And what was your experience of the volunteers turning out? Were you getting good numbers coming from your branch?
Yes, no, we did. It's obviously situational because some people, they work a shift work, so they might be able to help during the weekdays. So we tried to plan a weekday strategy as well as a weekend. Weekends, you tend to get more numbers because you then got a longer day, and basically you can really then push whether you're basically leafleting or data collecting to see where your yes vote is and where your people that aren't voting. And also some of the no answers, you would probably see that they could be shift worker people working over the weekend, so you would try and target those houses again during the week to see if they, it depending on the pattern of life. Sometimes you might look at a bungalow, for example, and say 9 times out of 10 it probably will be an elderly person in them, so you know more likely that you're going to get a response. And so you can sort of build that sort of good guesstimation depending on areas as well on that part. Just going back to the basically other branches helping out as well, I'll have to add that Maidstone and Morling came out, because obviously being part of the Maidstone Borough Council, it would be very good that if we got the three over the line, they would have actually then basically have three councillors they can also communicate with for Maidstone Borough issues.
Thank you to Maidstone. Looking at the election and what you actually put out, I've heard you did a dawn raid on the final day. How many leaflets did you put out during the course of the election?
Well, first off, we wanted to focus, because we're such a fresh party, by-elections give us a fantastic opportunity to get a lot of data, because we're concentrating our workforce in that one area. So we managed to get one leaflet out to start with to say, look, we're basically in the area. But the door knocking was more the essential part to then gather that data and basically focus on building that database so we can then bank on that when it comes to the general election. So what we're doing is we're preparing for that on a later cause, but then we know where our voters are. We can then target those individuals to see if they want to become members and even active volunteers themselves. So it was a good way. That was our main focus of mission point for that. Obviously, the postal letter was another critical one to actually target as well prior to the obviously polling day, action day.
And how readily did your volunteers take to the canvassing, the knocking on doors and asking people whether we could count on their support?
We do actually have quite a very good activist group in Faversham Mid Kent, and we're basically loyal to the cause and mission, and we want to make sure that basically Nigel does get into number 10. But ultimately we have to look at the local issue to win those people's favour to say that we can operate at that local level, to give them the confidence that when Nigel does get into number 10, he's going to have some fantastic MPs who are going to then know the local issues as well as obviously targeting the national issues. And that is basically, we want to create a good spinal network from the boroughs straight to the KCC part all the way up to the top, so that way then when information comes down we can then deliver more streamlined than having a Labour councillor in the area that doesn't want to obviously promote us.
But where you've got volunteers who are new to it, who haven't got the experience of knocking on doors, what we often find is that they're a bit nervous before they first start to knock on someone's door and ask them how they're planning to vote. Did you have enough people with experience to sort of handhold the newbies through that process?
Yeah, we tend to have sort of like a team leader who will then basically go through, and then if someone knocks on the door and that and they open, that person then may go across and then take the lead. So and then that way they can see what they're asking, just to then so they can get their feet basically in and their confidence level up, and then they can then target the things themselves. Obviously, some people, when they start knocking on the door, they might go and say no way. Or in this case, we had a lot more people saying yes, hence the result. We basically try to nurture them in a way that there's always people with them, so they're not on their own.
Yeah, it is actually a lot easier than people are afraid that it might be, particularly given the lay of the electoral landscape at the moment, where it's actually quite easy to knock on the door as a reform supporter, because the chance of getting a positive response is so much higher than it might be for some other parties. So looking at how you take that forward, of the doors, roughly what was the size of the electorate in the ward?
Because it's a 3-seat ward, I believe it was over 7,000.
So that's probably about 4,000 houses.
Yes, that's about right. So the thing is, it was quite a mammoth task that we had to do. Like I said, finding the three councillors to start with, and then obviously knocking on all those doors. So we did actively go out pretty much 9:30 in the morning to about 5 was the cut off. Obviously, we stopped for lunch. We're not that cruel. you get to know the local people in the pub, so they get to see you and stuff like that as well, and you get some conversations with that too.
So you actually got to knock on pretty well all of the as near as possible the 4,000 doors, and of those doors you knocked on, roughly how many did you get to actually speak to someone?
We actually got confirmed, I think, about 1,500 yeses on the doors knocked. So the thing is, we did quite well, but there was a higher number of no answers, which I would think that would be people going out to work might be a hospital appointment and you just miss them. So this is where the leaflet comes in, to then once you've put that through the door, they know you've actually, there's a presence right there.
Yeah, I mean, that's an impressive number to have recorded as reform supporters, and that 1500 will definitely give you something to go back to. I think we can only applaud the effort that goes into getting that data, and obviously it was reflected in the results on the day. Welcome from me as well, Paul. Could you just start by giving us a little overview about the ward in which the election took place? What sort of people live there? Is it working class people, middle class people, a bit of a mixture? Traditionally,
it's actually a very, very diverse mix since the boundary changes. And I can't remember where the boundaries were exactly for that ward, but I've lived in this area since 1971. So I'm familiar with the different demographics. And we have three very different areas within that ward, some very, very wealthy areas, and then at the other end of the ward, the old the East Ham estate, which was built after the war by the councils of Newham and East Ham, very much ex-council properties and very much working class people. And in the middle you have the a result of some of the 80s house building, some of the estates that were built with houses that, you know, decent size inside but very close together. So you've got three different areas to cater for within the ward.
So rolling back a few years, let's say 10 or 15 years ago, if you were looking at the ward, would you have thought it was a Labour sort of ward, a Conservative sort of ward, or a Liberal Democrat sort of ward?
If the ward boundaries were the same 15 years ago, you would have Conservatives, Lib Dem in the middle, and Labour in the other end.
So, but as a balance across the ward as a whole, generally speaking, which way do you think this ward would have gone?
It's always been a Conservative ward, as far as I can remember. And that is because I guess the wealthy areas actually came out to vote, and the not so wealthy areas weren't always that interested in politics. So it's always been a very heavily guarded ward by the Conservative Party.
Right. So, were there any particular local issues that were pertinent to the campaign, or do you think it was really Reform's national position that drove the vote, or a bit of a mixture?
Well, it's interesting. If you look at what we got, and I've looked at this over the last few years, whenever I've run in by-elections or council elections before, we've always managed to replicate what the party was doing nationally in terms of the vote share. That changed in the general election when we actually did some campaigning and we went out and we achieved 10% more than the national vote share. I think the national party was probably around 14-15%, and we achieved 24% in Brentwood. And we've done the same again. The national party in some of the polls is putting us at 35%, yet we achieved 45% here. So we're sort of 10% above where the party is polling nationally. In terms of local issues, obviously potholes. Russell did a fantastic job of highlighting the issue with potholes. But the big thing around here is crime. I mean, Brentwood is, despite some of the statistics that are manipulated to make us look as if we're doing okay, crime in Brentwood is quite high.
And so with the results, can you just paint us a picture for people who haven't looked at them in so much detail? How did that? You said you got around about 45% on this election. How did the other parties do?
So, Conservatives did 30%. The Green Party did 3%. Labour, I think, came out around, was it 13 or 14%, I believe. So they dropped in votes. We took votes from every single party, including the Green Party.
So the big losers, though, were the Conservatives. How much did their vote drop by?
I don't know what it was last time. I can't remember what they were. They won last time, but their vote was down to 30 or 31% this time.
Fantastic. And so could you just take us through your campaign? So did you get a lot of support from outside your branch, or was it mainly from volunteers from within your own branch? And what was the sequence in terms of leaflets, canvassing that you went through in the course of the campaign?
So it's, we were aware there would be a by-election on the day that Mark Reed died. He was the councillor who sadly passed away, which triggered this by-election. So we were aware there would be a by-election, but we didn't put anything into play until the funeral had taken place and we let his family lay him to rest. We started off with leafleting, and we put a team together. We had a lot of help from our own team in Brentwood, but we also got a lot of help from all of the other branches in Essex. A lot of people came to help us from as far away as Harwich and Harlow, and you know there was lots of other people coming along to help. We leafleted, we canvassed, we put a good team in place. We had some very experienced people working with us. Russell himself has been campaigning since he was 15. He's been a councillor before, so he knew what to do anyway. We actually canvassed for the first time. We didn't get a chance to canvass during the general election because we were short-staffed. We didn't know really how to do it, and we didn't have the team that was capable of doing it. This time we did it. We canvassed the whole ward. Every single door got a knock. Every single door got at least three leaflets.
Can I ask you about social media, Paul? One of the things I'm interested to know is how much local branches are making the most of social media and the pros and cons of that. What did you do around social media?
I left this to Russell because he is an expert on social media, so I did very little. And he was basically on Facebook all the time promoting reform and promoting the by-election. He's a far better equipped than I am to do that. We have a social media presence, but for things like Twitter on local issues, it doesn't really hit the spot. Facebook is better because you can hit the local groups. It hits the area better. Twitter, Instagram don't really do it for the general election, absolutely. But then the role of the branches at the moment is to push by-elections, to put the committees in place, to put the structure in place to make sure that we are ready when the next call comes to fight the fight. We're not politicians, as it's per se at the moment. We're branch chairs and branch committees. We're there to support and to create the structure that will enable us to be a fighting force when the time calls.
I would have thought that the fact that Russell, being the candidate, was himself lively and active on social media would mean that people could find that connection to him if, for example, they hadn't seen one of your team, if they've been out when you've canvassed, or you know, they've missed seeing you out on the streets. Social media can bridge that gap very effectively, can't it?
Without a doubt. Definitely made a difference. I couldn't tell you how much of a difference it made, but it did definitely make a difference. He is adept on social media, and of course he's on TV, so he's well known. His face is well known, so that definitely helped.
Did you try?
I think it'll be interesting also to be able to crunch the numbers on it, because I think one of the we look at the numbers in terms of an election, in terms of our vote share, the turnout, the percentage turnout of the local population, the number of votes by postal vote, etc., etc. But I think more and more we're going to have to get more adept at analysing social media as well, because you can get some really good figures in terms of engagement and understand how that has impacted the results.
We did that during the general election. We were able to do that. The agency that I had working with me for the general election was able to look at TikTok and the age group on TikTok that were following me during in July last year, or in June and July last year. Interestingly, the Russell did a video on Facebook regarding a pothole. And you may or may not have seen this, where he was.
I did. famous pothole video.
The famous pothole video. And out of the three polling stations, and that pothole was on the East Ham estate, and out of the three polling stations, that is where we got the biggest vote share from, the polling station closest to the pothole that was subsequently filled in by Essex County Council.
Did it have a George Cross painted over the top of it?
Not after it was filled in. It had a Union Jack in it, which is what prompted Essex County Council to scramble their team and fill it in within 24 hours of Russell posting the video.
Good stuff.
Did you try paid advertising on Facebook at all?
No. Did I do that? I've done it. I think I did that during the general. No, leading up to the general election, not during the purdah period. But I've done it before, and you can target that. I think I've done it before for members, so you can target that by postcode. That can be quite useful, but we didn't do any of that during the election campaign, this by-election campaign, no.
And looking at the where you actually fought the campaign, did you do anything else by way of having street stalls or other activity alongside the leafleting and the canvassing and the social media?
No, I mean, Russell went to visit a lot of other branches to introduce himself, because he's only been on our committee since August. We went through our SGM in August, so we've moved from an interim branch to a full branch. We were the first branch in Essex to do that. He went out to introduce himself to all of the other branches, and that helped us gain a lot of extra support. Because obviously it's hard work going out campaigning every day, as they were doing most days. It's hard work to get the same people to do it again and again. But no, the structure was leafleting, canvassing, door knocking, and social media.
And what plans do you have to further develop the reach that you had with that canvassing in the area? Are you going to try and fill in the doors that you didn't find someone on, or are you just going to move on to another ward and try doing it there? What's as a branch, are you going to build on what you've done already in this ward, or are you going to focus more on actually developing what you've got in other wards?
My goal as chair of the branch is to build on what we were. So I've stood in two council elections before, and I didn't really know how, what I was doing. We just leafleted. In fact, it was me and a team of two others that leafleted. The general election, we had about 40 people out leafleting, but we didn't do any canvassing. We didn't have the time or the expertise to do it. Head office has provided a phenomenal training program and support group now to help us learn how to do this properly. Having now done it on the ground, we can see what we need to do. And our plan for the next 2 to 3 years is to build the team so that they can go out, canvass every door in every ward and find out exactly where our vote share is. Now that we have a voice on the council, we can also feed back from the people that we've canvassed to the council, albeit Russell is only represents one ward, but he is a voice on the council that can be a voice for everyone across the constituency. I want to build a structure in Brentwood that is solid and isn't reliant on one person or two people, but that supports itself.
Could you say a bit more about the support from head office, particularly the training you just referred to? How was that delivered and how many people received that training?
So back in January, and Reform have been doing this for a few years. They've been providing training with bits and pieces, but back in January, they had a team that they brought in that I think really changed it. And we went to, I think on my training day was up in Peterborough. You may have been there, Nick. I don't know if you've been to any of these trainings. And it was a whole series of lectures on how to knock on doors, what data we're looking for, how to collect the data, what a by-election involves, what a general election involves, and the timetable within each of those. Since then, we've got support teams that work with us during by-elections, and I think I've had a fair bit of support, a good amount of support from head office, both from my regional director and from the people sitting in head office, that were there whenever I needed them. They provided leafleting support. They provided, I mean, they were even in contact during the count. I was on the phone to them during the count so that we could feed back all the data we were getting. So I feel confident that where we didn't have the support network during the general, I keep referring to the general election, but that was when we were all thrown in at the deep end. We didn't have the support network that we needed at that point because it was a very nascent party. It was still very embryonic in its development. We have that forming now. And with the right work from the branch chairs across the country, we will build an I feel confident we can build an electioneering team that will make a significant difference at the next poll.
Yeah, I mean, I did.
Tell us a bit about the postal vote situation, Paul. What percentage of votes were delivered? Were postal votes?
So we've got an electorate of about 5,200, and out of those, 750 roughly were postal, and about 500 were returned. We couldn't really gauge the percentage of postal votes that, at the time, that came back in our favour, because they've changed the way they count them. So we went to the count, but they're all open face down, so there was very little we could actually do to see how many of the postal votes were in our favour. We did, every single person got at least one letter on the postal vote list from us as soon as the postal votes were released.
Mm. I think
you targeted those postal voters individually and presumably got your message out quickly to them, because obviously those postal votes often get released quite early in the course of a campaign, don't they?
So this is part of the training the head office has provided. You know, 3 or 4 years ago, I didn't realise the importance of postal votes. Now we found out the day the postal votes were hitting the letterboxes, and we made sure that every single person on that postal vote list had a letter from us or a leaflet from us within a day or two before the postal votes hit their doormats.
Good.
I think with the established postal votes, there will generally be a bias towards the established parties because they've cottoned onto this previously and they've encouraged supporters to take out postal votes. And that varies a bit from part of country to part of the country. And my view, and I don't know what your comment on this is, that really going forward, particularly for local elections, the more we can encourage our supporters to take out a postal vote, the more we will get in terms of local elections because of the much higher propensity postal voters have to vote. So if you're saying 500 out of 720, that's 70-odd% voting?
Something like that, yeah. Roughly 60-70%, yeah.
And by comparison to an overall turnout, I'm guessing of around about 30%?
34, I believe. I think it was 29. For this ward, it was 29 last time, but that was an all-in, all-out election. So, and that was back in May 24. That was 29%, I think, average turnout across the constituency. This was 34%. And I think people were coming out. I think the increase in turnout was people were coming out because they're so hacked off with the state of the country.
But if you take the postal voters out of that percentage, the percentage of those voting face-to-face would then be more like down 22-23%, because...
Yeah, quite awesome.
And the difference is, so the 1,000 postal voters represented a much larger proportion of those voting than they do of the overall electorate.
I think that's, Nick, that's human nature. If you can be bothered to actually fill in the form and apply for a postal vote, it means you're interested in voting, so you're more likely to vote.
And it's easier because it's there on your doormat, yeah. which is why it's so important, particularly with the relatively lower turnout at local elections, for us to encourage as many of our supporters to register for a postal vote as possible, because all sorts of things happen. You're away on holiday, someone's ill, or whatever else on the day, they're not able to get to the polling station. And if they've got a postal vote, they could have voted. So,
absolutely, I totally agree. There was the only thing for us around here was we have an area where the wealthy houses are, the expensive houses are, and all the streets, a lot of the houses in the streets don't have numbers, they just have names. So when you're trying to deliver a postal vote to a named house, and you can't see the name because the driveway is 5 minutes long, and you get to the end of it and you realize you're at the wrong house, the delivering of the postal votes becomes a hell of a challenge. So in that respect, more postal votes would be harder for us.
Well, except that those postal voters are probably where the Conservatives got a large proportion of their votes from. And
yes, I think
if we could encourage more people on the estates to take out postal votes, where they've got house numbers, for want of a better way of looking at it.
The logistics of that would make it easier.
Yeah, I mean, that is a good measure of success in postal vote penetration. So if you saw in that ward the number of postal voters going up from 1,000 to 2,000, and that most of the extra ones were coming into the estates where we've been encouraging our supporters, people that when we've done the canvassing, we've registered as Reform supporters, getting postal votes, then I think that your overall vote in the next local elections would be significantly enhanced.
And it's something we have thought about introducing at our meetings for our supporters, in that we can, if they're not postal voters, we can have the postal vote forms for them to take away from our meetings. And of course, if we've got people out canvassing for us and working with us on the day, we want them to make sure they can still vote. So having them, if they vote in advance, that would help us.
Yeah, and you don't necessarily need the form. You can just do it directly online. So if all of your people involved in canvassing know the mechanics of signing up to a postal vote, if there's any query, and it is really quite simple, they can just explain it face-to-face to people. You know, all you need to do is to go to the Electoral Commission website and click on the link for a postal vote, and it really is as simple as that.
And I think we will do that as we now that we're not time constrained by a polling date. I think that will be part of our canvassing and our message going forward to the electorate at large.
I think sometimes when you've had a by-election like this, it does definitely fire up the local party. And I'm sure that you'll find that your supporters, your members are now extremely enthusiastic, A, because you've had a definitive win, a real victory locally, and this is just going to pave the way to more and more seats being won locally. But it'd be also interesting, Paul, if you could share what your learning lessons were from this campaign. Clearly, very successful campaign, but what can other local branches learn and emulate from you?
That's a very good question. So in by-elections, we do rely on support from other branches, and that's absolutely vital. It helped, without a doubt, it helped us massively. Going forward, we cannot rely on that wholly and solely, because if there was a county-wide election, we wouldn't get help from other branches because they would be focused on their own branches. So you have to build your network within your branch, first of all. That has to be your base network. You have to have people that understand that when we're canvassing, we're not trying to persuade people on the door. We're just looking for data. Had we, whatever the outcome of last week, win, lose or draw, we had data we didn't have before. That is important. So the first thing is it's a data grab. We, as a nascent party, we didn't have that data. We do have that data now. So it's almost a situation where you can't lose, because we still come away with something. In terms of what I would suggest the other branches, the advice for the other branches is, listen, head office have got it right. They are putting in a team that knows how to do this. And where we can have a little bit of a maverick attitude because of the fact that we've all come out of the sidelines to join in this new party, the advice and the direction that head office is pointing us in works. I followed what they said to do. We followed what they said to do, and it worked. Lessons learned? I don't know yet. I need to sit down and look at the numbers. I mean, we did well. We did very well. Where would I do it any differently going forward? I'd like to have more leaflets and more literature ready to go rather than have this just in time. What do we need now? That will come with time. We'll have a repertoire of literature we can send out. And the training, I think the training we need to do for the people canvassing would make a difference. There is an art to knocking on a door and getting the data and feeding that data back and then recording that data and making sure that we have the right information. That I think we need to do some more training internally for. We have the training programs from head office. I know how to do it. It's just finding now the time to find the people to do it and to deliver that internally within our branch.
Interesting. I think that learning reflection is actually a very important part of any campaign. It's very easy when you've finished when the polling is over and the results are out, win, lose or draw, like you say, it's very easy to then move on to the next thing. But actually, I think it's a very good process to be able to do that. Obviously, you'll need to do it, but also with your team as well, because there may be elements that you can replicate next time that you might forget if you don't, somehow write it down. But also things that you can learn and improve on for next time. There's a huge amount of learning that's going on the whole time. Like you say, head office have got the template right, but locally we're having to interpret that, actually implement it and make it work locally. And every area is going to do that slightly differently.
And of course, everyone will have different experiences. So they've got different political histories. They may have canvassed for other parties in the past. So they're going to have a different way of doing things. That doesn't make it right or wrong. It just means that it's not necessarily the way we want to do things going forward. We can use their experience, but not necessarily rely on that. We have the model that head office has provided. And like I said, it works.
There's one thing that you might want to consider, which actually in places the Liberal Democrats have done in the past, and that's to send a thank you leaflet out in the ward. And you can focus it in a couple of ways. You could have a specific one that you put to all the places that you recorded as likely reform voters, because I wouldn't be putting this in front of people that we have recorded as supporting other parties. But that leaflet can say thank you for your vote and putting our reform candidate in as the councillor. We very much appreciate your vote. If you'd like to join reform, here's a QR code that you can join with our branch QR code, so you get a bit more funds into the branch, and then a separate QR code on there to say, and if you weren't able to vote, or even if you were able to vote, why don't you consider getting a postal vote? And here's the QR code that will link with getting a postal vote. And that's one that I wouldn't send to the general people, but all those that you have recorded as potential reform voters, and what have you said, 1,500 or so that you had recorded as positives from that. And if you could get that on people's doormats within the next month, while the election is still in people's minds, people like to be thanked, and you'd have a pretty good idea that you'd had some reach if you saw some of those memberships coming back from it.
I think that's a good idea, Nick, and that's something we have mentioned, but I'm not going to mention it to my leaflet delivery team just yet, because they're still waiting for their blisters to go down. I will. It's something I'm going to discuss with my committee tomorrow when we meet, and yes, I think that is a good idea. We do have a general leaflet, which... we've been pushing a petition as well regarding the local elections next year. We want to make sure that they do hold them. They don't pull them like they did this year. So that'll be on that leaflet as well.
Well, unless you've got anything else, or if Wendy hasn't got anything else, I think all that remains now is to thank you very much for the time you've given. Good afternoon, George. Thank you very much for joining us here on the Reform Party podcast. Fresh from your success managing the campaign in the Isle of Wight, and we just want to express our congratulations both to you and the whole team, all the volunteers and the winning candidate. Could we ask if you could open by just giving an overview of the background to the campaign, the demographics of the ward, and the branch in the Isle of Wight, sort of volunteers, numbers, that sort of thing. So just give people a flavour for what was going on when you took on responsibility for running the campaign.
Yeah, sure. So the campaign, obviously, Isle of Wight is an island, obviously, but obviously that comes with its own difficulties, because to get to the island, you might or might not know, Nick, funnily enough, it's the most expensive trench of water in the world to cross based on the length of distance. It was it's an interesting ward as well. So unlike a lot of wards, it only had one poll station, which I think is quite unique with the elections I've done before. Usually there's been 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 in some cases poll stations. This one only had one where everybody was meant to attend. The ward is very interesting. There's a mixture of demographics there, and the ward for its history really over the last 20-30 years is basically always voted Conservative. It's been known as really a Conservative safe seat, only until this year when Reform did win it for the first time in May just gone. But unfortunately the councillor that we had in Reform that was in Isle of Wight unfortunately couldn't do the job any longer due to some personal issues. So unfortunately only 3.5 months into his term he stood down from office, which obviously triggered the by-election. And I think that was one of the challenges we faced, is that a lot of people in the ward felt that, you know, for the first time ever, they elected somebody else and trusted somebody else with that responsibility, i.e. Reform. And we essentially as a group put up somebody who didn't want or couldn't do the job. And that was one of the hardest things on the doorstep to kind of overcome, was the fact that, you know, I remember there was one gentleman, elderly gentleman, who said he's voted Tory for 60 years now. The very first time he ever voted for us was in May, and he felt that we basically took his vote for granted and let him down. And after a 5-minute conversation, we managed to convince him to come back on side. But yeah, it was a real struggle. From a volunteer perspective, it was great. We had people from the mainland come over. So we had volunteers from Isle of Wight, of course. But then we also had people from the Havant branch, the Gosport branch, the Fareham branch, and the Portsmouth branch all going over there to help as well on the week of election. So it was a real big team effort. It was really good. And yeah, we happened to get the win by 41 votes. So it was a real task.
Fantastic. So just for people who aren't so au fait with it, what were the percentages in the vote? I know you just picked the Conservatives, and how did the other parties do?
Not very well. So the Conservatives and Reform's combined vote was 67%, I think it was. And then the other three parties shared the other 33%. Labour only got 40-something votes. I think it was 49 votes they got. It was really abysmal for Labour. Green Party come fourth and the Liberals come third. But the Liberals only got 118 votes, I think it was, as well. So, yeah, they really didn't do too well on the numbers. So it really is a more centre-right, right-leaning ward. And it was a battle between Reform and Conservatives.
And could you just walk us through the actions that you took during the campaign, i.e. leaflet one, leaflet two, postal voter letter, and so on, possibly a dawn raid, and yeah, anything else you did it through the campaign?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, for me personally, I'm a lover of postal votes. I think postal votes are really, really important. And I often have always spent a long time on postal voters. I've campaign managed, it must be 20, 25 campaigns now. And other than a couple, we've won them all. And we do really well on postal votes, because I think what people don't realise is that, you know, when people receive a postal vote, 80-odd% of people will return those postal votes and vote. Whereas on the day, it's a very, very small number of people. So the thing is that when you're spending your time campaigning on postal voters, you know there's a good chance that those people are actually going to vote. So what we did initially was we did a general flyer to the whole of the ward. You know, this is our candidate, this is what we're standing for, this is who we are. Just like a general introduction flyer letter to everybody. And then we spent basically 2 weeks solidly focusing on postal voters. So we hit each postal voter with another flyer and another letter. We were very kind that the team at Reform HQ as well sent a letter from Nigel Farage down as well, which is amazing, to all the postal voters. And then we spent time door knocking those postal voters and really kind of drumming up those postal vote support. Once the postal votes have been sent out, we then focused our attention to people that then voted on the day. And we did this via, once again, another flyer. So we did another full flyer of the entire ward. Meanwhile, we were doing some door knocking, obviously, to kind of gauge the opinions of people. And then for this election in particular, we really ramped up the weekend before election. We knew it was going to be close because obviously as you're door knocking, you get a generalized feeling of how it's going, what percentages you're currently on. And although it's not foolproof, you can usually get a rough idea. And we knew that the ward was really close. We knew it was between us and the Conservatives. So we decided to really hit it hard on the week before. On the Monday, we had loads of people out and we covered the whole ward with a personal letter from Bill. So Bill wrote a letter just from him. It didn't have too much party stuff on it. It had obviously the logo and bits and pieces, but it was really a personal letter from Bill, our candidate, that really kind of drummed home who he was, what his experience was, what his connection to the local area was, and why he personally wanted to be a councillor for that area. And we put that through every single door, which was great. And then we spent 2 days then solidly door knocking on the Tuesday and the Wednesday before election, solidly door knocking to speak to as many people as we can, to remind them about the election and understand the importance of elections as well. I mean, we know being in Reform, we won an election with only 6 votes a few months ago, didn't we? A big election. So we know how important those few votes can be. And then, as you just said then, Nick, as well, we did the morning raid. So it was quite a big campaign. And for those of people who don't know what the morning raid is, we basically have a get out to vote flyer, which goes through really early in the morning so that when people wake up, it's the first thing they see on the doorstep on the morning before their post even comes through the door. So it's there on the doorstep as people wake up and come down the stairs. And hopefully that reminds them to get out and vote before they go and start their working day, you know. So that was the campaign we did. It was quite a heavy campaign, to be fair. You know, we did about 6 flyers / letters altogether, a lot of door knocking. But obviously it paid off when you win by 41 votes.
Yeah, big congratulations. I mean, it's worth it in the end, even though the effort is quite something, isn't it, while you're going through that campaign. George, yeah. Tell us a little bit about the team. I'm interested to know how big the team was that you had to work with, how many people, how many man hours were put in, because clearly you took this on almost as a full-time endeavour, probably more than full-time, in fact.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was asked by HQ to run the campaign. You know, I wasn't paid to do so. I do it as a volunteer, but I absolutely obviously love it. And my favourite thing in life is elections. I live for, I know it's so sad, isn't it? But I live for elections. I absolutely love winning. And there's nothing more that gets me going. I remember actually on election day, say remember, it's only a few days ago, but I remember on election day and we said to our candidate, look, make sure there's somebody outside the poll station with a rosette all day. And I turned up there after the get out to vote thing and I thought, right, I'm going to go door knocking and stuff. But after doing so much campaigning, you're exhausted. You know what it's like. You're exhausted. You're tired. And I got to the poll station and I remember the Conservative guy there was basically really frosty with me, really kind of dismissive of me. As somebody from the mainland, as they call it, they didn't really want a mainlander here, you know, get off our island kind of mentality. And if that didn't give me the energy, I don't know what will. I literally went straight back out. I remember speaking to my partner on the phone. She's like, I thought you were tired. I was like, this guy just gave me all the energy I need to carry on. And literally I was out there pounding doors again, you know. So we had a probably altogether, we had probably about 25 people involved in the campaign. And that kind of ranged from a couple of hours up to tens of hours. Myself, I spent quite a lot of time in it, probably 60-70 hours altogether. But you know, the teams ranged and we had people from literally local volunteers that lived in the area or worked in the area, all the way to, as I say, people from like Havant, for example. We had a guy called Terry Norton, who was the ex-deputy police and crime commissioner. He recently defected to Reform and he came over to the island and did a big day of campaigning. So we had a whole real range and mix of people that got involved, but I would say about 25 altogether.
In terms of the hours you put in, you said you put in 60 altogether. I suspect that's probably actually much less than in reality, because I know how much not only do these campaigns take in terms of your hours walking the streets, but also your thinking time. You're doing a lot of time thinking and planning and processing.
That 60 hours is, when I say that, that means as in campaigning, as in I spent 60 hours on the ground doing stuff. But you're right, there's a lot of backroom stuff like organising the flyers, organising the databases, looking through voter lists, looking at target areas, creating maps for people to go walk on. So there's a lot of stuff where you're not actually on the ground campaigning as well. So you're right, there is a lot of hours at the back of that as well.
Now, for somebody, you're a young chap. You clearly very, very capable. Got lots and lots of experience. But one of the things that is wonderful about the Reform Party is how many people we have who are joining, who are young people from, you know, teenagers, 16-year-olds and over. Now that 16-year-olds are going to be able to vote, we're targeting our teens. But we've also got lots and lots of middle-aged and older people in the party. It's truly a very, very broad church. What advice would you give to somebody who's perhaps in your kind of generation, who's really interested in getting involved, enthusiastic, fired up like you are, and would like to get involved in campaigning, but is also having to juggle a job, a family, other responsibilities? How can they do it?
I mean, look, the best thing with campaigning is that it can be in your own time, and it's completely flexible to you. You know, there is certain things with campaigning where it's particular days or particular times, but we are very flexible with our people that campaign. You know, we'll say to people, if they can't do, for example, a certain time or certain day, we'll give them a bundle and they can do it in their own time. You know, the key thing that we did when I run the election is I sent an email out to all the local members and said, look, would you like a bundle of flyers? I think it was our police and crime flyers that we'd done nationwide. And I said, look, we've got these flyers. I can send them to you and do them in your own time. And it gave the people the flexibility to do in their own time. The one thing that chairmen of branches need, and I'm the chairman of the Portsmouth branch, and one thing we need is volunteers. So trust me, if anybody says to me, I've got a couple of hours free, but only in my own time, I will give you something to do, because we desperately need people to help. So there's always things to do. And I would encourage people to do it. A lot of people also worry about the reaction because they see a lot of hate and a lot of issues on social media from the left wing of politics, and it can get quite nasty on social media. But the reality is that on the ground that really doesn't happen. I think on the ground the silent majority really are supporting Reform right now, and if they're not supporting Reform, they're certainly apathetic to Reform's cause or their desires or what we stand for. And honestly, I can say hands on heart, and I genuinely mean this, I must have knocked 600-700 doors in Isle of Wight and flyered, as I say, probably 10,000 flyers. I didn't have one person in the entire campaign say anything nasty to me, horrible to me on the doors. You know, it didn't happen. Some people were not interested in speaking to you or didn't want to talk, but no one was horrible. So I'd say that if for any campaigns out there they're a bit worried or a bit cautious, just give it a go and do it, because it's never as bad as you think.
I think that is very true, and that's my experience as well. I mean, there is the odd exception, but it's very few and far between.
Yeah, it is.
I just want to pick up something you said earlier, which was the letter from Nigel from head office. Now, when I was in a by-election a week or two ago, we also had that letter. And my understanding was, although I wasn't told this was happening in advance, that this is happening with all the by-elections. It's just, I don't think head office has mentioned it to people. Now, it is very helpful, but I'm interested that none of the other people who've been running campaigns last week have mentioned that at all. And I'm wondering if they weren't necessarily aware of it.
I think you're right, Nick, because I was visiting somebody in hospital the other day, and obviously we've got an election here in Paulsgrove, which is my ward. We've got a by-election here in 3 weeks' time. And I said, I was visiting somebody in the hospital last week, and one of the nurses noticed me from being their counsellor, and they said, oh, we received a letter through from Nigel today. I was like, oh, did you? So, yeah, you are right. Like, they are definitely being sent out, but without us knowing. So it's useful they're being sent out, but you're right. It'd be useful to know when they're going out. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I have sent that feedback, but I'm not sure if it sort of resonated. But anyway, for the viewers of this, I'm pretty sure that they are sending them to all by-elections currently for a major authority. That's not town councils, but it's district and unitary and urban authorities.
Yeah.
And that does make a difference, because when I first started bumping into people saying I've had a letter from Nigel, I was wondering, well, perhaps they're on our supporters list and they've had an email from Nigel. But no, these are a physical letter that's coming out from head office.
That's right, yeah.
And you mentioned about postal votes. Now, I'm also a big fan of postal votes and pushing them amongst our own supporters. And I sent you a note, and I'm going to be crunching some numbers and trying to keep a tab of that as we speak to people who've been running elections each week. Because for me, it's particularly important in local elections because, the, as you yourself said, the proportion of people who vote if they've got a postal vote is much, much higher than the proportion of people. It's the difference between 80, 70 or 80% of people voting or 20% of people voting.
Correct.
And if you've got, I don't know, 1,000 members and supporters on your database, if you can make sure that, though, if nothing else, those 1,000 all have postal votes, then that's 800 votes in the bag before you even start. And then as you go canvassing, if all those people who you record as a reform likely prospect gets a postal vote, so you entrench your position in all future by-elections. I'm feeding the witness here, but perhaps you'd like to comment on that.
Yeah, and I think this is another point to note, Nick. It's so important to note that that a lot of these postal votes have been postal votes for a long time. And this is why I focus so much attention on it, because you said the turnout's really high, but these people have voted for decades now, some of them, via postal. And a lot of these people are traditional Conservative voters, are traditional Liberal voters that vote them year in, year out. And it's so vital that we swing some of those votes. As I say, we haven't had the opportunity yet to spend decades collecting our lists of postal voters and all of our data yet. We haven't had that luxury because we're still essentially a new party. But that's why I spend so much time on focusing on postal votes, because the way I see it is, if you can swing one postal voter, it's worth two votes. You know, it's really that important. And once you convert those postal votes once and you get them to think outside the box and vote differently, as long as the candidate that wins then does a good job, you've already secured their vote for life. But as you say, we said this to our members when we've had branch meetings. We take postal vote applications to our branch meetings. They come on, everybody, sign up for a postal vote. Because the chances are, as you said, if you've got 700 or 800 members and supporters on your branch databases, the likelihood is they live with one other person or two other people or three other people in some instances. So you can really sign up thousands. And it's one of the successes we've had down in Portsmouth, because we have signed up a lot of postal voters, and those votes are banked. They're in the bank, they're done, essentially. And it also stops you wasting time around election times, because you know that you can kind of rely on these people to put up posters in the window or put garden stakes up in the garden. So it's not just about the postal voter voting, it's also about what other support that they can provide as well. But yeah, I 100% agree. I think everybody should sign up for a postal vote. I know there's a lot of people that hesitate with postal votes because they worry about the corruption or fraud, but in my experience, my personal experience, the local council here runs postal vote in so openly, so stringently, and I've never seen anything that would give me any concern. So I would always recommend postals.
I mean, there are some valid concerns about postal votes, but they don't relate to the individual. So that if you get a postal vote, that will be helpful. It was a very good point you just made there about if you can convert a postal voter, it's worth two. And that is very true. In fact, with postal votes, I'd almost go so far to say, as far as local elections concerned, if you can put the effort in between elections and get more postal voters, you could just about forget about the actual campaign, because you will already have won before you get there. Now, I wouldn't go quite that extreme, but you get the
principle. I get the principle. Yeah, absolutely. It just gives you that air of calmness. I mean, we did it in Paulsgrove. So my ward is Paulsgrove. And when I first stood back in 2021, I spent a lot of time on postal voters. I got just over 500 postal voters signed up over a year. It was a real big campaign that I did as leading up to it. But as you say, those postal voters are now banked, and every single year we get those in. I mean, last year, when I re-stood for election last year, I won 72% of the postal vote. You know, because obviously when it comes out and it goes on the table, you can tally them. And yeah, 72% of the postal vote I got last year. And I ended up with 65% overall with all the on the day votes, you know, and that work I put in years ago into collecting those hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of postal votes has been worth it ever since.
Paid off, didn't it?
I was going to say, there you have it in a nutshell. And really, the more we can build that into future campaigning. So, for example, have you considered putting out in this Isle of Wight ward a thank you leaflet, particularly focused on those that we had recorded from the canvassing as reform likely prospects? And what I am suggesting to people is, with that leaflet that's focused on people we think are reformed voters, with a couple of QR codes, one to join the local branch so that the share of the funds comes to the local branch, and a second QR code on there to sign up for a postal vote. And I think that if we get that leaflet out within a month or so, saying thank you for electing our councillor, and why don't you get a postal vote and why don't you join us, I suspect that that would pay dividends.
I agree. It's something that we do round here, absolutely. And I think that if anybody's watching or listening to this and they're a councillor and you haven't done it yet, it's never too late to do it. I think it's really important to engage with people. A lot of people don't. This thing as well, Nick, is that a lot of people actually don't know how to find who their local councillor is or don't know who their local councillors are. So we as Reform have really got to go above and beyond. We've got to take it to levels that the other ones never have done before. And I think a thank you letter that says, you know, say, and say, if anybody's listening to this now and they're a councillor for Reform, they haven't done it, please, it's not too late, do it. Write to your residents and say, thank you for voting me in last year. I've taken me a year to find my feet. I now know what I'm doing. I'm on this committee, that committee. This is what I've done so far. If you ever need to reach me, here's my contact details, blah, blah, blah. You're right. It's so important to thank the people that supported you. It's something that other parties don't necessarily always do. And it shows that you're contactable and reachable and you're not just around at election time. So, yeah, you are 100% right, Nick. It should be encouraged to do thank you letters and thank people for spending their time to vote for you.
I hate to say it, but the other people.
Sorry, Nick. Can I just ask a final question of George? When we're interviewing chairs or candidates, we're asking them what their learning lessons were, because there's lots of different experience from people who've just really started campaigning or learning how to campaign, right up to people like yourself, George, who've got years of experience, hundreds of hours under your belt, and very, very experienced at campaigning, and also enthusiastic about it, which is critical. What learning lessons could you take from this campaign that other people could copy?
Listen and don't dictate. I think that when you knock a door, I think it's always a big mistake to tell people what you're going to do for them. I think it's always important for them to tell you what they expect you to do if they vote for you. And I think that that's one of the things that you know, if people ask you for your opinions and stuff, it's great. But I've always gone in with the fact, especially with swing voters, especially people that say, oh, I'm more Labour-led or more Tory-led. I always go in there and say, well, you tell me what you want from me. At the end of the day, if I'm elected, if I'm representing you, if Reform is your new councillor, then we work for you. You are our boss. So you tell me what you want from me. I'm not going to dictate to you, this is what I'm going to do, this is how I'm going to do this, blah, blah, blah. Listen to people. And that's what I'd advise anybody that's out there to do, because I think 90% of the people that vote at the moment are disenfranchised. They're annoyed, they're angry, they're not happy with the current system, whether that be locally or nationally, and people just want to be listened to. They want to be able to vent their frustrations. They want people to understand what matters in their street, and what matters to one person might not matter to the person next door. And it doesn't mean that one issue is any less or more important than the other. I mean, my ward is a prime example of this. I've got in my wards some of the highest social housing rates in the entire city. We've got a bank of thousands of social housing, people that struggle to pay their bills. In the same ward, we have got the richest area in the whole of the city, an area called Port Solent, where their issues are completely different. But when they come to you with an issue, their issues are just as important as the other person's issues. And what we have to do as campaigners and as councillors and as candidates is learn to listen and to write down. And what my dad was also a councillor. He actually retired a few months ago. My dad was also a councillor, and he did this really impressive thing one day. And I must tell you about it because it's so valid. And I said to him, I said, look, that door there, I pointed at a door, I said, that door there won't even speak to you, because they were never interested in speaking to me. They would never talk to me. They always didn't like me when I knocked the door. And he was like, all right. So he went up to the door and I sat in the car watching him. And he had a 15-minute conversation with this person, and they ended up putting a poster for him. And I said, how on earth did you do that? And literally what he was doing is, say, he was making notes of what they cared about, what they really mattered. And then when my dad won the election, he went back to that house with those same notes and said, right, you said X, Y, and Z, and this is now what I'm going to do for you. And I thought, what a genius. And he was so respected amongst his residents because he took the notes down, he listened to residents, and then when he was elected, he went back and resolved those problems. And I think, as I say, that's my biggest advice, is to listen, not dictate.
Amazing. Thank you so much, George. Great. Well, it's great to have you on the podcast. Thank you so much for sharing about your experiences. Again, congratulations to have had that as a reform hold. I'm looking to the next, we're all looking really to the next year, 2 years, 3 years, potentially 4 years, where no doubt there will be further by-elections where for one reason or another, a reform candidate has to step down and there may be a by-election. So I think your experiences on the Isle of Wight are very, very critical here to see that we can continue to hold those seats with successful campaigning.
And it's key. And make no mistakes, HQ were under the full impression that we were going to lose that seat to the Tories. Even on the day, I was getting a message from the by-election manager saying, you know, we don't think we've got this. And to be honest with you, I sat there saying, it's going to be close, you know. So, you know, these things can be turned around. They can be won, but you need a good campaign. Campaigning is so important.
Amazing. Well, I'd like to say a big thank you to you for being on the podcast. I don't know, Nick, if you've got any final words or a final question you want to ask George.
I was just going to make two observations. One, reference a thank you letter. The one other party that does it fairly regularly are the Liberal Democrats. And as Nigel says, when it comes to campaigning, we should be prepared to learn from the Liberal Democrats. And they do focus on that local stuff. And secondly, as we go forward, you said about just winning or just losing, and the importance of our campaign, whether we win or lose, in terms of the data we collect. Mm. And what we're seeing across the country is how even where reform doesn't win in particular seats, it's still making strides forward. That Labour vote is still coming down by 50%. That Conservative vote still coming down by 50%. And even if they hang on in a particular ward, we've established our presence there. And because of our coverage, both in rich areas and poorer areas, there is no such thing now as a safe Labour seat. And there's no such thing as a safe Conservative seat. All seats where reform is voting will be in contention with reform. And we have to keep putting that work in everywhere, regardless of win or lose, because our big target is that general election in 28 or 29. And for whatever the result we get in individual local elections, it's all contributing to the effect at that general election. So my final thanks is to all of the volunteers on the Isle of Wight and those who made the journey at some expense across the Solent from Portsmouth, from Southampton, from other areas in Hampshire to the Isle of Wight to support them, as well as the candidate. And so very well done to all of them. They are really the bedrock of what we need to be doing to achieve success.
Absolutely right, Nick. And no man is an island, make no mistake, you know, no man is an island. And without a good team, we're ineffective, you know, and we're very fortunate down here to have an incredibly dedicated, loyal and enthusiastic team. And without each and every one of those, there wasn't a win on Thursday. So, you know, you're completely correct that it's a huge team effort and we need more and more people to help us pound those streets.
And finally, as a sort of note of the podcast, we hope that when we send you the final copy for this, that you will circulate it, encourage people to like and share the Reform Party podcast, because as we go forward each week, we will be aiming to speak to the people who've run the different campaigns. So there'll be learning lessons across the piece. And the more widely we can disseminate that across volunteers and members of Reform, the more of an impact it can have in spreading best practice and the lessons learned.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, George, for your time.